Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you very much for joining us. Let's go to Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News or College Basketball Insider. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Good morning, Stephen. How are you?
Doing terrific. All right, we've got the Final Four set. Before we get into to Kansas and their victory in a great game over Duke in overtime yesterday, 85-81, I wanted to ask you about K-State, their run to the Elite Eight, and their loss to Loyola, and now Loyola, of course, in the Final Four. All right, so now that it's over, what did you think of K-State's season and ultimately what happened in the Elite Eight against Loyola?
Well, I thought they did a great job to get that far, especially Thursday night against Kentucky. Kentucky had a clear talent advantage, especially with Dean Wade out of the game, and they were able to come up with a game plan that was extremely effective. You know, it's funny because I've got Kentucky fans mad that the game was called as closely as it was and there were that many fouls called. And I'm like, do you understand? They beat the tar out of your guys. If they had not called those fouls, you'd have lost by 20. They were absolutely beating the stuffing out of Kentucky's players, and it was a brilliant game plan by Bruce because it was the one way to make those players uncomfortable that went beyond the consequence of the game and all that. Make them uncomfortable, make them feel physically diminished, and it was a beautiful game plan by Bruce, and I think that there's no question that that was the difference in the game. And they were willing, as far as I could see, to sacrifice every one of their starters to foul trouble or to foul disqualification if they had to get Kentucky off its game, and it absolutely worked.
Do you think that K-State basically expended all of their energy emotionally and physically in that game, or do we just give all the credit to Loyola for being terrific in the Elite Eight?
I think Loyola was the best basketball team in that region. I mean, at the end of the day, they had more going for them than everybody else there, and I think that's why they survived. Cincinnati was really tough physically and very capable, but they weren't able to hold on to a lead when things got rough. When the pressure was on, they weren't able to hold on to leads. Virginia wasn't flexible enough. When they weren't playing well, and when Plan A wasn't working, they never went to Plan B. Tennessee, you know, very close to being able to take out Loyola, but a point, you know, weren't able to get the stop they needed to get when they needed to get it. And you know, ultimately, K-State, you know, they just weren't as accomplished. They didn't have the formula to win at the same level that Loyola did. And that, you know, I don't look at Loyola as this, how did they get their team? I mean, they've won 32 games. That is not easy to do. You have to be really, really extraordinary to win 32 games in a Division I basketball season.
So we've been talking about Porter Mosier, the head coach at Loyola Chicago, and it's just an interesting story, Mike, because we're not talking about some hotshot, young, up-and-comer coach. He's 49 years old. His career record as a head coach is 121 and 110. He was fired at Illinois State back in 2007. It's not like things looked like they were going great for Loyola Chicago until this year. And then all of a sudden, you talk about it, they're having a tremendous year, not just this run of the tournament. They've been fantastic all year. What should we learn from the story of Porter Mosier and this team?
Well, I don't know. Maybe sometimes we don't look enough at who their guys are. I mean, I right now that, like, people are, how does Sean Miller not get there with X level of recruits? Look at who the players are and how they play. It's not about numbers. how many times did Alonzo Trier have to not come through for you to feel like maybe that wasn't a guy that could, should come that would come through for you? And you know, at some point, you're sort of wedded to those guys as a coach. You brought them there. You know they certainly aren't performing poorly enough for you to not play them. But you kind of know that there's always going to be that obstacle there that it might not happen when it needs to happen. And right now, Porter did a great, and his group, his staff, did a great job of putting together a group of players, including two terrific ones from your area, that understand basketball, that understand that accept what they're being taught, that believe in each other. And that's really the number one thing in this game. There are a lot of guys who can teach you X's and O's, but it's about getting the right group together and getting them to perform and believe and to perform under great pressure. Like I said, that Cincinnati team, that one thing they didn't do in the end, even though they played under great pressure at Wichita on the final Sunday of the regular season, they played under great pressure against Houston in the conference tournament, and then they didn't, when they had a 22-point lead, perform under great pressure in the NCAAs, and that's the one that people will stick with because it was the last one.
All right, Mike, let's move on to Kansas and Duke. After thinking about that game last night, and I'm sure you had lots to say during the game, as we all did, watching that game, that was a crazy game. It was one of the better games I've seen in recent memory in the Elite Eight. How did Kansas do it? What was the key to Kansas getting that victory over Duke?
Well, I think the first thing that Kansas did was come up with a really good plan and a really smart plan. With Bill and his group to understand what makes Marvin Bagley effective. And, of course, they had two terrific big guys, especially Adoka Azubuike, and then him being replaced when necessary by Silvio D'Souza. And essentially what they did, Bagley is a special player within 12 feet of the basket. That's what, I mean, he can do other things a little. He made a three yesterday. But what makes Bagley special is the 12 feet around the basket, like draw a 12-foot arc, and he owns that space. And Doak basically said, I'm not moving until somebody makes me. I'm staying right here. And Fee did a tremendous job with his responsibility to be the primary defender. But what made it work was Doak, and to a lesser extent Silvio, but he had a big part in it too, those guys never left there. They didn't have to, in part because Wendell Carter didn't make them, and in part because Wendell Carter wasn't out there very much. And when Wendell had to come out for fouls, and ultimately was DQ'd, at that point, then the game plan was accelerated. You know, I've seen some people saying what a great job Bill did, and he did, but you know. Basically, he came up with a plan A and never had to deviate from it because Wendell Carter's foul trouble empowered his plan. It made his plan more effective because when Kay went to his bench, he went and got Marquise Bolden. Well, Marquise Bolden does not have a face-up game. And then he went and got Javon Delorier. And Javon can drive it, and you saw that a couple of times in the second half, but neither one of them is going to change who you are defensively. If you're Kansas, you're not saying, oh gosh, we're going to lose because Javon Delorier made a couple of layups. And the other part that helped Bill immensely was the fact that Grayson Allen and Gary Trent didn't make any shots. Some of those were contested, but a lot of them were open, and neither one of them could get a shot to drop. So Bill had a tremendous plan, but I don't think he really had to be that elastic. He was able to say, okay, this is what we're doing, it's working, let's keep with it, you know, and then on offense, you know, it was just about, you know, finding a way to attack the zone, and he's got great shooters. They made shots. Svi made shots. Malik Newman was unbelievable. They did a terrific job of getting the ball to the great example of this, of getting the ball to soft spaces and then using that to create openings was the what was basically the game-winning three by Malik from the left corner, when the ball went into the high post and LeGerald didn't even hold it for a second. He just a slap pass, an immediate touch pass over to the corner, and Malik caught it and dropped it. And that was, you know, that was a perfect example of how a team can be comfortable executing against the zone. That play was one of the best zone plays I've ever seen. And I've seen, you know, I've seen some really good attacks of zone by Kansas, by, you know, Pitt when they used to go against Syracuse's zone with Ben Howland and Jamie Dixon. They kind of owned it. That was as good a play as I've ever seen against the zone defense.
So, Mike, I find this Kansas team interesting on a lot of fronts. They're the one seed in this region, yet they were a 3.5-point underdog in this game. I think they're a 5-point underdog in the game against Villanova. I'm seeing a lot of people saying this is Bill Self's best coaching job because considering all the challenges this team has to win the tournament, to win the Big 12 tournament, go to the Final Four, best coaching job ever. And I'm seeing other people say, wait a second, they were picked third in the country to start the season. This is where they're supposed to be. How good of a coaching job is this by Bill Self relative to, you know, his tenure at Kansas?
You know, I was talking to someone inside the department on Saturday, I think it was, and or maybe it was Friday, and I wrote about this. I think it was Friday before Friday's games, and I wrote about this in the column that I wrote about Bill and KU and how, you know, everybody always thinks of this job as like the one that's happening now is the best. And like, cause like nobody ever comes up to you and says, hey, remember in 2009 when they lost 6 of the top 7 from the national champs and they still won 27 games and went to the Sweet 16 and were a hair away from beating Michigan State? That was his best coaching job. Nobody ever says that.
Right.
Cause it didn't happen yesterday. he's doing great. And the fact that they're still alive after yesterday's game, which was, it was such a great contest between two terrific programs and two terrific teams. And we saw how close it was. My friend Fran Fraschilla, who I'm sure you guys know very well, has a thing he says. And it basically, the ball's in the air, and he's saying, good coach, bad coach, good coach, bad coach. You know, if the ball goes, yeah, you know, if the ball falls off the rim, then no one is saying, that if it falls off the rim and into the goal when Grayson shot it, no one is saying today that Bill cleaned K's clock. They're saying, Bill failed again in the Elite Eight, 2-8 now. That's what they would say. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, I made a joke in the column that I wrote about this. Was, you know, I made a joke about the joke. I said, you know, welcome to the the Elite Eight, or as we know it around here, Bill Self Memorial Weekend, because it's such a joke that people think that winning, you know, two Elite Eight games and making two Final Fours is easy. And I listed all the people who never made it to two Final Fours. Getting to that many Elite Eights is an amazing accomplishment. And he's done that. And now he's won 3. And, again, the list gets shorter of people who've made 3 Final Fours. And the thing that people forget about that, and this really hit me when I did it, and I didn't make a big deal of it in the column. Okay, so he's 2-8 3-7 now in Elite Eight games. So that means he's been in 10 of them. Kay, who is the greatest coach of all time, is now 12-3. That means he's been in 15 of them. Kay has been at it at a high major level since 1981. High major level, 1981. Bill has been at it high major level since 2001. I mean, think about that.
Wow.
10 since 2001. That's an astonishing number, and no one looks at it as astonishing because they prefer to focus on the negative.
How do you think they match up against Villanova?
Well, Villanova is a very skilled offensive team, and so are they. I think they actually match up well in a lot of ways. The interesting thing for them, well, you can't plant Doak by the bucket anymore because Amari Spellman can go out and he can make a three and he can really move and really run, and that's kind of the challenge for KU, I think. The biggest one is, you know, obviously you have to contain Brunson and Bridges to some extent, but you're built to at least be in those matchups. Devontae's a great defensive player as well as a great offensive player who can put a little pressure on Jalen Brunson at the other end. So, I mean, although I think Jalen's better, and I love Devontae, he had him on our first All-America team, I think Jalen's better, but I don't think he's like worlds better. I think he's a little better. You've got Mikal Bridges, and you've got LeGerald Vick. So, you know, long, elastic, dynamic guys. You know, I think that, again, I think Mikal is better, but I think LeGerald is in the matchup. The one that becomes interesting is that big guy matchup, because Spellman is a, you know, he's a perimeter guy, an inside guy. He can really play on the move. What, you know, how does that go? How does Doak guard him when he's out on the perimeter doing pick and rolls and that sort of thing? That's, you know, can he do it without fouling? Those are challenges for KU. I think that's the most, you know, that's the matchup that if I were KU, that's the one I'd be thinking about the hardest. How do we make this work?
Malik Newman's averaged 18 points a game since the start of the postseason. I'm including the Big 12 tournament there as postseason.
No, actually, I think it's higher. Are you sure it's not higher than that?
Gosh, I just did the calculation. Unless I did it wrong, he had 30 against Oklahoma State, 22 against K-State, 20 against West Virginia. What brings it down is he had 10 against Penn in the first round, 28 against Seton Hall, 17 against Clemson, 32 against Duke. Whatever it is, it's incredible.
I thought that added up to 22, but I could be wrong.
Maybe it is. I just did it real quick on a calculator, and I might have done it wrong. Either way, how does he match up against the Villanova defense, and is it going to take another incredible game from him offensively if Kansas is to advance to the championship game?
Well, I don't know if he needs to score 32. I mean, it certainly would help to have him have another big day, and honestly, it's not. I mean, right now, this is Malik Newman. I mean, this is who he is. He has fully accepted and grasped what it is to be the best version of Malik Newman. When he was a high school guy, and this was true when he was playing for the U-17s for the U.S., because the U.S. didn't have a real point guard, so he had the ball all the time. And his main thing, when he helped the U.S. win the Worlds, was, you know, basically he would take the ball, he would get a ball screen, and he would go. And when he came to Kansas, I thought it was great for his development, because it forced him to be who he more naturally is. In reality, it's good to have that ability to take the ball and go get your shot. And that will help him. I'm sure it's helped him at times this year. He hasn't had to do that much. It certainly didn't have to do it yesterday because of his own. But it'll help him to have that ability, but he's a more natural scorer than he ever will be a point guard. And he can make a living in the NBA as a scorer, and they're not worried as much. If you're tough and you can hang in a defensive matchup, and he certainly showed that yesterday, you can be a pro two guard at his size. And so he is playing like that now. He is really, you know, as I said again, go back to that one zone play, off the catch. I mean, he didn't have to bounce it. He didn't have to, you know, get a screen. He just, boom, catch it, shoot it. That's, you know, that's a great skill to have. And he's really got that now. And he didn't really have it when he got here. No one ever threw him the ball because it was always in his hands. So that's a long way to come. I know people wonder, why did it take so long? But it's a long way to come for a guy who has played one way his entire life. It's, you know, it's almost like getting a tennis player who is a great right-handed tennis player and saying, now you got to play left-handed. I mean, it's different. And he now has that. That's who he is now. He is a two guard, and eventually he may play some point again here, or he may play it in the pros, but he is a more natural two guard than he ever was as a point. And he's showing what a tremendous dynamic scorer he is. He'll see a lot of Dante DiVincenzo, a lot of Phil Booth in the Villanova game, I would think. DiVincenzo has the size to bother him a little, and Booth is a tough veteran guy who really knows how to play. He was a hero in the 2016 championship game, so big pressure games won't bother him. It's a great matchup on both sides. I think I'm really excited about it, and I know a lot of people are going to say it's the real national championship game. And it really is, you know, of the teams in the Final Four, there's no question these are the two best. But that's not how this works. I mean, this is the way it played out. So we will see, which one's able to survive. But I certainly give Kansas a terrific chance to win the basketball game.
And you were right. He's averaging almost 23 a game during that stretch. My calculation was wrong.
I'm not much of a mathematician, but now I know there's at least one person in the sports media world that I'm one up on.
Oh, definitely you got one on me when it comes to math and statistics, Mike. It's going to be a fun Final Four, isn't it? I mean, I got to imagine you're really looking forward to this.
Oh, absolutely. It's Everybody will be focused on Loyola, and they'll be focused on Loyola for all the wrong reasons. But because they're mid-major and because they're not expected to be there, and not because they're great, which they are. I think as I wrote in today's, if you want to see me rank the Final Four, it's up there now on SportingNews.com and on my Twitter account. And the point I made about these teams, we have four great teams. It's four 30-win teams. It's only happened, I think, five times. It's the first time in the last 5 years that we had four 30-win teams. And it's only happened five or six times since 2000 that we've had that. So, I'm not pretending it's 2008 here. You know, this isn't 4-1 seats, but this is four tremendous basketball teams.
Thank you very much for the time, Mike. We'll talk to you very soon.
Okay, fellas, thanks.
That's Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News. Up next, we'll do some math with Nate Bucati on Sports Radio 810 WHB.